Welcome to this, the third series of our Ghost Lights podcast. This season, we'll be talking to some brilliant young changemakers who are challenging the system, asking questions of established leaders, and already making huge contributions in their bid to make the world a better place. My guest for this second podcast in our Changemakers series is Tami Schweikler. Tami is the managing director and founder of the social enterprise Makers Unite. Based in Amsterdam and with a strong emphasis on sustainability, his focus is on entrepreneurship, social innovation, and creative leadership. Welcome, Tami. It's lovely to have you in this conversation. Where are you in the world? What do you see out of your window at the moment?
Pleasure so mine, Tracy. It's a pleasure for me to be here at Ghost Lights Podcast. I am sitting in Amsterdam today. I'm watching this very grayish Dutch weather, and October tends to be the most difficult month of the year. So we are enduring.
Yes, I'm here in the UK and it's equally grey out of the window. But Tami, it's lovely to have you here. And I think a great place would be to begin at the beginning and to ask you about Makers Unite. How did the idea come to you? How did you come to found it?
Yeah, it's really nice for me to always come back to the starting point of Makers Unite, which is not by founding a business, but by answering a social issue, which was the refugee migration crisis in 2015 and 16, the Syrian, as consequence to the Syrian conflict. So we had thousands of newcomers, refugees, we refer to as newcomers, and moving into Europe in 2015 and 16. And I was at that time busy with working with a social enterprise in Africa, in Kenya, building a beautiful motorcycle brand to support local taxi chauffeurs to get a first employment, which was for me a dream job. My background is in design and entrepreneurship. So building motorcycles to help minorities for me was a great opportunity. But at the same time, this big challenge happened in Europe and my doorstep in Amsterdam, where refugees were not welcome. And I thought, well, that I wanted to do something locally with my abilities or something that I could help. And I was volunteering at a design lab, actually, in the outskirts of Amsterdam called The Beach, thebeach.nu. And they were in discussion with the local government on several possibilities to react to the crisis. And they were invited by a Greek organization to think about the challenge of upcycling life vests. So when a newcomer crosses the sea from Turkey to Greece, the first thing that is left behind is this orange life vest that's left on the shores, so they can continue their path towards Europe. At that point, we're looking at millions of vests that were being piled up in the Greek islands of Lesbos, Chios, and Samos. And when I look at that, the perception of a designer is to be a connector. So to look at the problem, not from a solution perspective, but from a questioning perspective, and gathering the different stakeholders to mix these opinions and think, okay, what can we do about it? So in Amsterdam, I gather a group of newcomers, locals, politicians, designers, just average Dutch people to think around a box of life vests and say, what can we do about it? But actually, the life vest is not the problem itself. It's a symptom of the problem. And the problem is social exclusion. And when we inquire newcomers, what is the meaning of life vest for them, was really surprising, because they said, well, the meaning for me is about hope. It's the only thing that I have to cross over the sea. And when I start to step in Europe, my life is going to start again, which is actually a very beautiful story. And that time, you only see tabloids or newspapers using the life vest as a symbol of the crisis. So I heard a story of hope. And when we would ask Dutch people, what does an orange life vest mean to them? They would say, well, orange for me is the color of King's Day, the biggest festivity in the Netherlands. I thought, why don't we make a positive symbol to talk about the crisis from a positive perspective, a perspective of opportunity, a creative symbol of hope, to share the story, and to try to raise awareness about the fact that newcomers are people just like you and me. They have hopes, dreams, opportunities, and talent, and they deserve a new chance in society. But we have to work together. We have to work together to create this new start. So we started a campaign called Revest Life in 2016 with installations made of this life vest. We brought 2,000 life vests to Amsterdam We started to make ribbons, just like the AIDS of cancer awareness ribbons, but one made of life vests in orange, with a card saying "Newcomers are new here, and we should work together to create a more inclusive society." And the unfolding of this campaign was really positive. We had thousands of ribbons that were made by local Dutch students and newcomers together. And the making process created a lot of opportunities for them to connect, to create friends, to find opportunities of housing, opportunities of work. So we gathered this, and I thought, okay, if I would think of a commercial business that will make textile products and use the making process to create connections, this could be a sort of a circle going around process. And this is the start of Makers Unite. It's a social enterprise to create sustainable textile products together, to create opportunities for newcomers and locals, 50-50, to grow together as a more inclusive society. I've been doing this now for the last 6 years, and so far, so good.
Well, Tammy, that's such a fantastic. I learned so many things I love about that. I mean, your convening power of bringing, newcomers, as you say, refugees together with government companies, locals, and that different way of looking at, as you say, that potent symbol of life vests that we did all see, in our newspapers, and actually turning those into something powerful, something positive. I mean, I'm always interested in you using design thinking and creativity and design as a means for bringing people together. And I wonder if you can say a little bit more about how that actually works in practice.
I cannot do other way. For me, design thinking is a way of understanding how big problems can be solved in a simple way, how to test ideas, assess concepts, and see what works, what doesn't work, restart and prototype again. The starting point for me was to create a blueprint to understand. For instance, we had newcomers in this making process with us. They got into a given opportunity, so I started by making a blueprint of this trajectory that they followed. And based on this blueprint, create an assumption of a blueprint of a business. But on a design thinking process, you never stop with your development. I'm always looking into, okay, how can we test this assumption of a business and collect insights that help us to grow further? So every new stage of Makers Unite was always a design thinking process. We had a brainstorm, a co-created brainstorm, which always involves input from newcomers, from our team, from our board, from clients, from the most diverse as possible. Create a new idea, test this idea out, see if it works, see if it doesn't work, and then move on to the next step. So for us, I think the biggest wealth of design thinking is allowing multiple perspectives to be taken into a solution, and never assuming that this is a given set top-down solution to move further. And this also has to do a lot with the co-created nature of Makers Unite. There's a lot of way, another way that we do apply it, which is by co-creating products. So we're bringing input from big companies that have design teams or marketing teams, and they have a certain ambition to launch a certain product. So we combine this with a total diverse input from newcomers who bring a total fresh new perspective, and the result of this is beautiful. It's is innovation, is creativity, and most of the time we're looking into solutions that are making the planet a little bit cleaner. I must say that the levels of application design thinking in our process go from a strategic to a very practical one to the design of products. And then besides strategy and products, we have our program. The revenue of the programs of production of Makers Unite is reinvested into social inclusion programs for newcomers with a creative background. So we train them for 6 weeks to create a career plan, and after the 6 weeks, they're stimulated to be connected to the job market. This whole process is co-created, is based on design thinking sessions and creative thinking processes and tools that help newcomers to think a little bit out of the box, because sometimes it's difficult for you to regain confidence into yourself and into society. And believe the creativity and design thinking tools are really helpful for you to recognize, to refine, find again your own potential and trust in yourself. And I believe that trust is the fundamental element for social inclusion. When a newcomer trusts himself again, they can trust in ourselves, in our relationship, in our communities, and little by little in getting to a new job, into the society we live. So it's very multidisciplinary in the application of design thinking in our process.
It's genius on so many levels, Tommy. And as you say, that co-creation, that giving people tools and the work, you know, the working together that you talk about and giving people confidence. I mean, I wonder, I mean, it'd be lovely to hear perhaps you talk about the sort of narrative of some of your newcomers. I mean, maybe is there a story of somebody who came perhaps early on in 2015 and what has he or she gone on to do as a result of their association with Makers United?
Well, now we have more than 250 stories to tell. But the one I keep remembering, which was the first one that really sparks me the idea of thinking of this scalable program, was a boy called Hassan, who came here as a tailor. He was at the time around 18 years old. And I started right away to try to, because we got to know each other in this making of the ribbons. I thought, I want to help this guy, I'm going to get him a job as a tailor. When I realized that he was too young to know that he should be a tailor, and I get to him and say, hey, have you thought into something else you'd like to do? I said, yeah, I do want to be a computing engineer, but that's so far from my reality. And what do you know about it? Well, I just got this computer from a friend in the refugee camp. I'm doing this online courses at Oxford.com called Python. I said, I didn't even know what Python was, this coding language. But then I saw a lot of eagerness to someone with a lot of potential. And I made a call to a friend that was starting a coding school for newcomers. I said, hey, I have someone for you. And we made a, we'll call it a match. And Hassan connected to the school. And now I think we are 6 years later. He graduated from university and computer engineer, got a lot of jobs as coding. He's starting his whole career. And he's a successful example of someone with a lot of talent that needed an opportunity to shine. And I believe that his story really paves my sort of obsession by connecting talent and opportunity, because I believe that there's a lot of everyone has a talent, but it deserves an opportunity in order to flourish. And I think a lot in society today is connected to talent that is not connected to opportunity. Yeah. And a lot of our challenges could be solved. These connections could be facilitated in a better way.
Yeah, that's connecting talent to opportunity. I mean, I'm just thinking as you were talking, I mean, presumably the Dutch government is a huge supporter or partner of Makers Unite, because this is such a positive story you're telling.
Yes, it is. We do have good relationship with the government. We don't have any structural partnerships because we are a business, and we are a business, a commercial enterprise that uses its revenue to foster social inclusion. And this is sometimes hard to understand, I'll say, the governmental institution, because we as a social entrepreneur or social enterprises, you are always trying to innovate beyond the scope of what is traditionally accepted. And for instance, the governments, they have in the Netherlands a structure of collaboration with private organizations that is related to financial commission. So if you have a financial agreement with the government, you can also be liable for what you do. But in my request, I never asked money from the government. So I wanted how to create the ability in this process. So there's a lot of conversation that has to go within what we do and what the local government or provincial government wants in try to find alignment. And still has to be a lot of work from my end, our end, in order to convey our message. But after these years, we're taken into a lot of discussion groups, into a lot of think tanks in the several levels in the Netherlands to rethink potentially the role of social entrepreneurship to tackle upcoming challenges in this transition towards sustainability.
That's interesting. But I mean, you do have pretty vibrant collaborations with businesses, don't you? With partnerships with businesses. I mean, how has that worked and how have they evolved since 2015 when you started?
Yeah, that's really, for us, there are a lot of dimensions to be lucky to great to have good partnerships. Right? We have a partnership with Ben & Jerry's, with Lush Cosmetics. We have a partnership with a big transportation company, Arriva, the Stedelijk Museum, TED. So it's really nice because the starting point of a collaboration with the corporate is a shared honest, shared value base. So we work only with companies that had a proven like-minded traditional value that connects to ours, and our work can be an added value to the work they're trying to achieve. So if you look, for instance, at Ben and Jerry's, they have a strong social mission to enable a better positioning of refugees in Europe. Is one of their four pillars in the social mission. Our work, making T-shirts by newcomers in our production that can be given to their clients, is an added value to this. So structuring this partnership for us brings us revenue to sustain the company, sustain our programs, but brings to the company a huge added value on showcasing their commitment to a sustainable transition. And it's specifically today the companies are facing a big challenge into providing a transparency to when it comes to diversity, inclusion, to sustainability. Our proposition offers to them a clear way of showing to the world, look, we're doing something that is not only good, but is real, and is proving real benefit. To every partnership that we do, we also deliver to the companies an impact report that says, hey, this is the amount of hours that it created employment for former refugees. This is the amount of material of sustainable fabrics that you save from waste, for instance. Those are kind of deliverables of our partnerships. And that's also really interesting because we don't call our partners clients. We call them partners because we're working together with a similar mission. So that's really nice. That's for us, working with businesses is a way, a large business, this is a way of diffusing our story to a broader audience, which is a key element of our mission. To diffuse awareness is really a key element of our mission.
That's great that your starting point is a shared ethos and a shared vision. I mean, I saw recently, I think it was recently, tell me that you did a workshop with Kate Raworth around sort of donut economics. And I know that that's the sort of the circular economy, as you say, sustainability, the planet is absolutely key to everything you do. I mean, is there an example recently of something you've done in that space that you're particularly proud of at Makers Unite?
Well, that's our day to day. Actually, after the book of Kate's term, circular economy or the donut economics have been widely diffused. But that's our starting point, that we have been solving a social issue with a environmental solution by taking textile waste out of the waste and making new products out of it. We are using this opportunity to create social inclusion. So we call it this a double donut deal. The thing is, when looking into circular economy, quickly you tend to think of wind energy, of electrical transport transition, or CO2 saving. But the starting point for me is making wise use of our resources. And in Earth, we have human resources and we have physical resources. And for me, if a society is not working properly because their resources are not being properly used, talent is not properly allocated to opportunity, that means that there's a failed circular economy process there. Our proposal at Makers Unite is try to solve this on a sustainable way. So we make, for instance, production for fashion brands. They want to work with recycled fabrics. Circular textiles is a big role of our work. Only because I cannot solve a social problem creating an environmental one. It doesn't make sense for us since the beginning. So we've been doing this, and now we're scaling a lot into going into the sphere of repair in large scale for big brands to create in employment for marginalized communities. There's a lot cooking into this way. And I think that these opportunities only tend to grow. The opportunities of living in a world where we make conscious use of our resources is endless. It just makes sense.
I mean, you speak, Tommy, so powerfully. So you've got a lot cooking, there's a lot of energy there, and you're doing huge amount. But I just wondered, how did you guys cope with the last 18 months when essentially any economy, let alone the circular economy, sort of stopped? And yet, as you say, these social issues didn't stop. I mean, how did you adapt while we were all in lockdown?
In most of sectors very challenging. We had our orders. We serve either companies that are making events or fashion calendars or cultural institutions. While museums were closed, fashion shows stopped, and there were no events. So our orders stopped from day one to day two. what was really interesting is because using this grassroots process at Makers Night, I thought I'm just gonna go back to the tailors and say, what do they say? And we had a group of tailors sitting in an idle production line, and they basically look at me and say, look, we have a lot of fabric and a lot of people we need in the city who are homeless. Why don't we make face masks to give to them? So with an open heart, the opportunity, I said, you know what, let's just do it. If we're going bankrupt, let's go in the best possible way. So I started to produce thousands of face masks for homeless people in Amsterdam and to donate them. But this action got so much attention from the local media, newspapers, and TV. It's quite crazy, right? So the refugees that were being excluded from the country suddenly are helping the Dutch people to go over Corona. So what was interesting is that this has been picked up for the media, and we got due to visibility and a large assignment from hospitals requesting to make medical vests. They say, hey, I saw your campaign for the face mask. Could you produce this commercially for us? And that was a huge assignment and save us, allow us to bridge over the period of COVID until we started to get assignments back again. So it was quite special. It was a process that was really special for us. And of course, have to readapt our team and our process and our intake to diversify what to do.
A great story about how, generosity of spirit, your initial thought to make face masks for homeless people, results in actually, you getting a commercial contract. Not that you did it for that, but that,
Exactly.
you're.
Yeah.
Tell me, as you look into the future now, and you're a design thinker I know very well from our previous work with you, and as you think about where you want to go next with this, are there current frustrations that you wish to turn to delight, or is there a natural next step as to where you're going to go with this in the future?
Yeah, I think as a social entrepreneur, I look into problems and try to look into them with a, we call it a preemptive entrepreneurship process. Unfortunately, we work today solving global problems. So there's a specific issue that came to the Netherlands, and then we create a solution for it. I wish that social entrepreneurship would avoid social issues to happen before they happen. And that's also go into the environmental issue. So I'm looking into, for instance, there's a lot of new in form of migration that will happen in Europe due to the Afghanistan, for instance. So I'm looking into how can we create solutions for this before it happens here. And to what has to do with fashion production, I'm looking into ways how can big fashion brands produce less, so create a more sustainable way of living. And trying to always combine how do we provide solutions to a specific market that benefits the whole. And they will create employment at one end, they'll create sustainable products on the other. That is not a win-win, but a win-win-win situation. That's what I'm looking at this moment. And not only in the Netherlands, but we're looking into a few opportunities of scaling our process abroad and going closer to where newcomers are in need.
Interesting. Oh, we're almost at the end of our time, dear Tommy, but I just can't resist asking you a last question at, this time where, we look around the world and there are some depressing elements to 2021, but you're somebody who creates opportunity, who deals in optimism. As you look around at the moment, what gives you hope?
I think what gives me hope is there was a moment during the last 2 years that the overall perception of how the world works changed. There was a moment that the average consumer look at how, for instance, supply chains work and thought, hey, that's enough. And there has been a shift in thinking how our pattern consumption work. Unfortunately, now we see that the way the ports all over the world are getting flooded again. It seems that we're going back to the same place. But I'm very hopeful that there has been a spark of change. I've read recently in a lawsuit of McKinsey saying that after the COVID crisis, the consumer is willing to, for instance, the fashion consumer is willing to purchase items that are more sustainable. Well, that seems to be something really small. But if you look at the spectrum of it in the long term, they really can spark change, and I really, how can I say, I am an addicted optimistic. I think that there's always a chance and a challenge to look at the other way, to look at how the glass is half full, and how can we from this challenge create a new opportunity.
Well, it's been a great pleasure to talk to an optimism addict. Thank you so much, Tammy. And also thank you to everyone for listening. You'll find some links to Makers Unite at the end of this podcast, and hope you'll join us for our next Changemakers conversation. Goodbye.
Thank you very much.